Hey guys, JJ here. The Minnesota Rundown is sponsored by the Better Edge app. Better Edge is a legal online social betting marketplace that you can use real money to wager that allows you to post and engage with other sports betting fans, place no commission positions in an online marketplace, compete in direct head-to-head challenges, compete in public or private betting competitions, and buy or sell positions, whether that be spread, over-under, money line at current market prices. Use promo code 10K at betteredge.com to get a free $5 when you sign up and verify your ID. Once again, that's 10K at BETTOREDGE.com to get a free $5.
Are you guys looking for some kick-ass local clothing? Well, let us tell you about our friends at SodaStick. Go to their website at sodastick.com, and hell, if you find something you like, there's no way you won't. Just enter the code 10KTAKES at checkout to get free shipping anywhere in the U.S., you'll certainly catch us wearing their top-notch apparel. Once again, it's SodaStick, SOTASTICK.com, and use the promo code 10KTAKES. That's 10KTAKES to get free shipping anywhere in the U.S.
This is the Minnesota Rundown, presented by 10,000 Takes.
Welcome to another episode of the Minnesota Rundown, presented by 10,000 Takes, where you can get everything you need to know regarding Minnesota sports and be a little bit beyond, and hopefully an unfiltered, more common man perspective, unique, funny, humorous, whatever you may call it. We try to talk everything Minnesota sports, as depressing as it can be. We try to hit on everything on this podcast. So we want to thank you for joining us another week. As you also know, we're kind of getting into the heat of football season. We're in fall in Minnesota. The weather's getting, it's kind of that perfect medium. And what comes with that is, of course, football. And I think it's only fitting to, with the Vikings just starting, the Gophers now in couple weeks into the season, especially the Vikings after week one, a lot to vent about. I think it's only fitting to bring on a Vikings writer to discuss the Vikings and some football here. I want to welcome on our guest on today's or this week's episode, Arif Hassan. He covers the Minnesota Vikings for The Athletic. And I also saw, you know, in your Twitter, you are also a Kansas City Chiefs co-owner. Now, is that a bit? Is that a joke or is that legit? I got to hear more about this.
No, it's a bit. It's a bit.
Okay. But I love it. Just, I love it.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, part of it's just because whenever I like have a take, right? Like I'm just like, hey, I think, you know, Josh Allen's not very good, you know, whatever, right? Like right. Whatever take, you know, people will bring up that I cover the Vikings. And so I'm not allowed to say this player is bad because the Vikings are bad or whatever. And you know, obviously they don't like follow me, right? These are just people where my take gets kind of out of my sphere. And so they have to look at my bio to kind of see, you know, what they can use to dunk on me because they didn't like my take. And so I just decided to add that I own the Kansas City Chiefs. So you can't dunk on me because my team is really good. So I know it's not a very like well thought out bit, but it's been pretty fun to work with for the past couple of months. So yeah, it's not that deep, but that's the idea.
No, that's smart, though, because there's so many dumbasses on the internet that'll go after you. Like, you can't have a take because you're not associated with this or that or this. It's just so dumb. So you're totally trolling them back in the face. You know, you're putting it back in their face, you're trolling them in a way. But it's also a good bit. We're all about bits here at 10,000 Takes, and it's our name, Takes.
Right. Yeah.
All the takes you need, man. This is it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, like I think it started out something like, you know, hey, I don't think that this person did the 2-minute drill very well. I've totally forgot who it was even. Right. And they're like, oh, but you cover Kirk Cousins. And I'm like, yeah, I should know then. Right. Like,
I cover football.
Yeah. Kirk Cousins is bad in the clutch. It's like, I don't care, man. Sure. Maybe. I don't know. But
I'm not talking about Kirk.
Yeah. Like, who cares? I'm not Kirk. I get to say whatever I want. This is so weird.
I know. You're
are nuts online, dude.
You have the credentials, but you also, you got to just go with it. You got to play it off. Like, you got the KC Chiefs co-owner in there because you're playing along with it. You're trolling back. Yeah, it's the internet. People are stupid. And no, it's fun.
I have a ring. I own the Kansas City Chiefs.
Mm-hmm. I'm a co-owner for Pete's sake. I think it's a good idea. Actually, this is smart. So every time you want to bring up something about another player on another team, you just quickly change your bio to that team's co-owner.
Oh yeah.
And then they go there and they're like, oh, it's going to throw people off. It's gonna, and they maybe believe it.
That's not bad. I like that. I like that. Yeah. Anytime it just starts taking off, I'm like, yeah, I don't think Carson Wentz is very good. By the way, I'm one of the co-owners of the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah. Quickly go to your bio and then you can be like, no. I'm an Indianapolis Colts co-owner. So yeah.
You know, honestly, he's going to get in trouble. I'm going to cut his paycheck.
Yeah. No, I know what I run the salary on this thing. So Like if someone comes after you, it's like, I'm a co-owner. I can actually cut his salary. So
yeah,
you better watch
out. You don't want to go too hard. It'll impact him. You don't want that.
No, not at all. It's like, come on guys. Don't be talking to the co-owner here. Like I could have some influential decisions here. So let's calm down. I had to bring that up. I had to talk about it. I think that's hilarious because that's just, it's a troll right back in the face of so many dumb internet people. But we love it. And speaking of a fan base, I thinking that has a very toxic, I would say, Twitter, social media, Facebook has some really brutal comments. The Vikings, you know, I'm not saying, I think a majority of our fan base is cast common sense. I just think the 10% of them are very loud on social media and they're very stupid. And a lot of dumb stuff obviously came out as was said about the, after the, you know, Vikings game on Sunday and with good reason, some things, but some people were overly crazy with some of their takes. But I want to talk about that. Obviously dig into that. I know everybody's probably been venting about it, but what the hell, what the hell happened at the beginning of the game, and especially in the first half with all these penalties, like what the hell caused this with players? These aren't like rookie players. These are some experienced players. Like what, I mean, from your perspective, I mean, what the hell happened there?
Well, it's kind of nuts. I don't ever recall CJ Ham getting called for false starts in his life. And if he has, it's been pretty rare, right? You know, he's been in the NFL for a while. He's got two false starts. You know, Tyler Conklin, obviously he hasn't had a ton of snaps, but you know, he's been around the NFL for quite a while. He had a false start. Illegal formation penalties from Brian O'Neill, of all people, like people who should kind of just know how to line up. And the weird thing about that is that usually if a player is not like covered, right, if he's not on the line of scrimmage, the referee will very often give them a warning of some sort. And I bet that's what happened in this game. Maybe it didn't, and that would suck. Mm-hmm. But I bet that's what happened in this game. And then he continued lining up a little bit off the line of scrimmage. So they eventually called it, right? And like you said, these are players that should absolutely know what they're doing. Like the holding penalties, you know, maybe that's just the product of them not playing very well and trying to make up for it. That's something that you can kind of understand, especially, you know, Mike Zimmer said that Cousins was holding onto the ball a little bit in the first half, and that increases the odds of a holding penalty, which, you know, is true, I guess. So some of it you can kind of understand. Some of it is just baffling. Like a lot of these penalties are like procedural or penalties that you just don't expect somebody with a lot of experience in the NFL to commit. So I wish I had a better answer, right? All I can say is that I don't really expect these kinds of penalty problems to be an issue going forward. It's not like a defensive back that constantly gets defensive pass interference, although I guess we could talk about Breland for a second. You know, that's the kind of penalty that you're like, I think that guy's going to probably keep committing them, right? A lot of these penalties are not penalties that are like inherent to the players themselves, right? That you don't expect them to commit them going forward. Like we said, they have a history, and in that history, they haven't committed those penalties in the past. So it sucks for that game, obviously. I mean, the average yards to go for the Vikings on a play was 10.2 yards. The only team in the NFL in week one that had more than 10 yards to go on average. And of course, you get a new set of downs, you have 10 yards to go, right? Like the fact that it was more than 10 yards is just wild. Obviously, as a product of these penalties, which I don't expect to be, for the most part, an issue going forward. I mean, Michael Pierce doesn't have a history of defensive offsides. I mean, if it was Everson Griffin, that'd be one thing. We know that he's got a history of that. But, you know, Michael Pierce doesn't. You know, Tyler Conklin, he's going to play a big role going forward. So maybe we'll see if that changes for him. But, you know, we don't have that history with him. It's just really bizarre.
Yeah, it was really weird for me. And I found it hilarious, though, in the sense of how many penalties they got right away at the beginning of the game, like three in a row. And I remember, like, on the way to where I was going to watch it, I was listening on the radio. And of course, Paul Allen, the, you know, radio play-by-play guy for the Vikings on KFN, you know, he's very, very like, you know, very excited, very loud and gets really into it. I love it. But like, I was laughing, but it made me jump in my car when it was like, they said on the third flag, there's a flag on the field. Who's it on? They're like, they didn't know. And all of a sudden Paul Allen was just like, it's on the Vikings. He was just like, so irate.
Hold on. That's a great impression. Wow. You nailed it.
I believe it or not, I have over a year ago, when we were first kind of formulating and starting the company, we did like a virtual live stream for charity and we had Paul Allen on it and we did an impersonation thing. He would rate my impressions. Wow. Like I would do, and he's loose. No.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was going to ask you to do the no. That's great, dude. That's great.
Yeah, it's crazy. And people are like, wow, that's awesome. It's like, yeah, I've listened maybe Paul. Maybe the bad thing is I've listened to Paul Allen too many times in depressing Vikings moments.
Right.
That's
right.
Probably where I can get it down. But it was great. That was the only benefit of that is hearing Paul Allen get upset because there's notorious calls. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it's great. But in the end, it sucked. And I remember, I think you saw retweeted it with just a bunch of question marks regarding they were getting penalties, or Garrett Bradbury specifically was getting these penalties because it was the first time he was playing in a
stadium
full of fans.
Yeah. And the thing that gets me is that if Zach Taylor, the head coach of the Bengals, so that's where the quote comes from that I was retweeting. If Zach Taylor had said, yeah, maybe Bradbury committed a lot of penalties because he hasn't played in a packed stadium before, that would be like one thing. That'd be just like, oh, you screwed that up. But it was, yeah, we planned to attack Bradbury and make things confusing for him because, you know, he's only a second year player, which isn't true. He's a third year player. He's played in packed stadiums before. He played, a lot of people bringing up the playoff game against New Orleans, but of course he's also played in the ACC, right? Like these are not empty stadiums. I mean, he's played, you know, obviously NC State gets packed, but he's played at Miami. He's played, you know, at Clemson. Like these stadiums get really loud, right? So it's just like such a bizarre thing. It would have been made more sense if he hadn't said he's a second year player. It would have made more sense if he's just like, yeah, I mean, you know, the Vikings played an entire year without fans. So we just decided to exploit, you know, the fact that there might just be kind of a lull in their ability to deal with that. Like that would have made way more sense. And I would have been like, fine. But the way he worded it was very confusing.
Yeah, I saw that. I was same reaction you had, like scratching my head, like what is he trying to talk about here? I don't understand it. These are still athletes that right. In the end they practice for this. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter
if there's crowd noise at practices. They specifically wanted to have the starters out against Kansas City in the preseason game to get them more experience. And I'll say from my experience, the crowd noise at practices, not that loud, right? So like, mm-hmm. It's not one-to-one or anything like that. But, you know, at the same time, so long as we're picking nits, you know, most of the false starts weren't on offensive linemen, right? It wasn't anybody Garrett Bradbury was communicating with. It was like CJ Ham, right? So it just a very bizarre thing. It kind of just retroactively makes the loss more embarrassing, right?
Yes.
Because it seems like the coach doesn't do research. Like, that's who you lost to? Rough.
Right, exactly. And it's like, you literally, you're a coach like Mike Zimmer in, what, a seventh or eighth year or whatever it is. You know, you've been here a while and you literally start off this season where there's a lot of expectations. Your job is probably on the line. You start off with all these penalties. First half, ridiculous, like 10 plus penalties for over 120 yards. I saw that stat. I'm like, what the hell? And I mean, ultimately, I think that ultimately contributed to the loss in the end is all those penalties. I mean, it was ridiculous how many possessions you saw where it was like second and 20, third and 20. There's a majority of their possessions. They were running it. Mike Zimmer was running the football and like up the gut on a second and 15.
Yeah.
What are you doing, man? like people are like, and then people have the audacity. And then the Vikings fandom has the audacity to say Kirk didn't play well in the first half. Well, yeah, he had some bad plays, but it's like the whole team's on a third and 20 because the O-line's fucking up. And then they're running the football on second and 20 plus yards. And it's like that totally kills any drive to score any points. They still manage to tie the football game and almost win with the disastrous first half they had. And I just think that ultimately contributed to the loss in the end, in my opinion, from what looking at it. It's like they totally shot themselves in the foot right away. And that's how it is.
Yeah, if you take a look at like the yards lost, right, which I just looked it up, it was 116 total yards lost. I think the first half was like 91 or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. If you take a look at that and you say, hey, if the Vikings had 116 more yards in the game, would they would have won? Well, obviously it was a tie game at regulation. 100 additional yards probably would have helped a little bit, right? Would have kicked another field goal, whatever, right? So they probably would have won. The thing is, they lost really, in actuality, much more than 116 yards, right? Because they lost the yards they would have gained on that play, first of all. But second... Mm-hmm. if you're on third and 24, you're almost certainly not going to convert, right? And if you don't convert a new set of downs, you don't have an opportunity to gain more yards. So you lose all of those potential yards you would have gotten on the conversion that you probably would have had if it was like third and five instead, or if you'd been able to convert on second down without the penalty, right? So it really, they lost more than 100 yards in that game due to penalties. I mean, the actual penalty yardage is 116. They lost probably 150, 200 yards just from those penalties because they couldn't get those additional conversions. And you think like, man, if they had 200 more yards, I don't know that the game would even be close, right? Because, you know, Burrow, I thought he played really well, but the Bengals overall, I don't know that was really the case. Jamar Chase played really well. There are some plays where he wasn't targeted that are hitting the timeline where Chase looks even more impressive than he did in the actual game when you're ball watching. Like, fantastic. I don't want to take credit away from them, but, you know, the Bengals defense was not playing up to the level that, you know, would hold an offensive team like the Vikings to 24 points. Just so happens that there were a bunch of errors. Now, some of those errors were because, you know, the Bengals pass rushers are better than the offensive linemen. Fine. That's true. But for the most part, you know, the false start is not because, you know, B.J. Hill as good of a game as he had. It's not because B.J. Hill was scaring Ezra Cleveland or anything like that. It's because the Vikings just had a bunch of mental mistakes. So, it is a really rough loss today. And obviously this impacts field position. Joe Burrow gets more points because the field position, you know, you're punting to midfield, right? You're going to score points on that drive usually. So, it really screws up our ability to fully evaluate how the Vikings did in that game, how Kirk Cousins did in that game, which I thought fourth quarter overtime, I thought Cousins played really well, really, really well, which is kind of the opposite of how you expect Cousins, right? Because he's kind of collapsed in the clutch. And what have you, but I think in particular, you know, that was probably the best example aside from those playoff moments like against New Orleans, where you can say that he kind of comes through in those big time situations, which he needs, right? He needs to have that, you know, kind of under his belt for the Vikings to have confidence in that going forward. But yeah, a really bizarre game to kind of break down and evaluate, and the penalties, which is not to say I'm blaming the refs, right? I mean, we can talk about the ref contribution later, but the penalties that the Vikings did commit was a huge part of the reason that they lost.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's a huge setback. You can look at, because a team loses for a reason. Like, you ultimately put less, this is a John Madden take, but, you know, you put less points on the board as the other team. Why? Because you didn't play as well. But it's like, you look at that and analyze it. Like, when you get penalties and you push yourself back, you're not setting yourself up for a chance to score points. And in the second half, when they committed barely any penalties, really not at all, they went off. And Kirk, I thought, did enough for them to win the game, quite frankly. Delvin Cook looked okay, you know. But you do look at, like, the one thing that comes to mind is, like, I feel like there's always dumb luck, too. Like, I want to talk about the penalties, because that was just – that overlooks everything in terms of why I think contributed to that. To that loss in terms of you can talk about the reffing and everything, but there's always dumb luck in Minnesota games with Vikings in these close games. Like that ball that was thrown to Mackenzie Alexander, that was already a tough pick for him because he was on his knees. But the fact that it bounced off his helmet right to a Bengals player and they went and ended up scoring on that drive, it's like that should have been incomplete in theory, and then they shouldn't even have like had a shot at it. But it's like it bounced like right off the side of Mackenzie Alexander's helmet and went right to a Bengals player. It's like, come on, really?
Yeah, it's like, absolutely. Or like that. You know, the way the ball bounces on like a fumble, right? Obviously, there's a big fumble, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, teams have a 50% chance of recovering a fumble that they cause, right? It's not that it doesn't take skill to recover a fumble. It's that there's not really much meaningful skill difference across teams to be able to recover fumbles. All teams are generally equally skilled because they all care about recovering fumbles. They all practice a lot. If they didn't, that wouldn't be true. And it just so happens that this time the Vikings didn't recover their own fumble. I mean, that's part of that's luck, right? Like if they recover that fumble, almost certainly they win that game, right? Because they're so close to getting in field goal range. And maybe I shouldn't say that because a game winning kick in overtime, you know, we don't know that that's a certainty for the Vikings.
Exactly.
But, you know, I think for most teams in most situations, that's almost a guaranteed win, right? If that fumble either gets recovered by the Vikings or it doesn't happen, or the refs see it a different way on review, right? So you're right. That when a game, especially a game, gets that close, you know, those individual moments can have such big swings, right? Like that's one where, you know, Pro Football Focus will grade Joe Burrow negatively for the play, right? Because it goes to Mackenzie Alexander, bounces off. Alexander's only ever had an interception in the NFL. He didn't have one in college. He didn't have one in high school. He's not a hands guy, right? Bounces off his helmet, should be a pick for most defensive backs. It ends up being, I think that ended up being like a first down and then some by a pretty small margin, extensive drive. The thing is, you know, the Vikings forced the Bengals to convert like 20%. Like they're like 3 of 13 on third down. How often do you lose a game where you force the opponent? How often does an opponent score 27 points? So 3 of 13 on third down. Almost never happens. So a lot of that is just rotten luck, which I mean, that's part of the reason that you watch football, right? They don't just like add up all the numbers on a spreadsheet and decide who wins. You watch it because these crazy events have such a big outcome on the game and it's fun. Mm-hmm. But the downside to that is that you'll get burned by, you know, the downside of bad luck.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate, though, for as much as there's bad luck, you know, I've grown to into the point of view where it's like you shouldn't have to rely on winning a game on luck. You should have did enough around before that to kind of be able to account or leave room for something like that. The Vikings shouldn't have been trying to come back in the second half against them. You say, well, Mackenzie Alexander should have intercepted that and it wouldn't have been a touchdown. Well, they should have been up by 14 points at that point. And like, I firmly believe looking at the angles that wasn't a fumble by Dalvin Cook. I thought he had hit the ground and I thought it was ripped out. But again, we shouldn't have been in overtime. We shouldn't have been in overtime in general for it to come down to that. But that's what I think. But you've been pretty, it's like you're pretty definitive and confident saying that was a fumble. Do you believe that was a fumble in theory or from what you saw?
If you showed me that play without any kind, if I had never seen that play before, if you show me that play, I probably would say it's not a fumble, but that doesn't mean I disagree with what the refs did there. Because live, bang, bang, I can see why they allowed that to be called a fumble on the field and allowed that to be recovered. And then here's the problem is the review process. The review process is never to determine what actually happened. It's to determine whether or not there's enough evidence to overturn the call on the field. And because that's the standard, you need to have definitive evidence. And I don't think the evidence based off of the review angles, like maybe if this was a primetime game, there were more cameras in the stadium, we would have gotten better angles or something like that, which I would not have scheduled the Vikings-Bengals game to be a primetime game. But you know, if it had been the case, right? You know, maybe we would have had more cameras. We would have had more, you know, definitive evidence. The thing is, I don't really like the way that people have been kind of litigating this. First, because I think to your point, the Vikings shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. So it's kind of difficult to blame the refs. But second, the way people talk about this, they're giving us individual screenshots, individual images. And that's not that important, right? Because if the ball is in Dalvin Cook's hand as his ass is on the floor, right? Mm-hmm. That is not evidence that that's not a fumble, because if the ball is moving, then it's being ripped out, then it's still a fumble by the way the NFL tends to call these things. And if the ball is moving, you can't determine that from a single frame, right? So I don't like the way people are talking about it, because they're talking as if the ball is in his hand, and that's not just how it's ruled in the NFL. So from like a perspective of like what ultimately happened, we'll never know the truth, but if the closest we can get, I would say it's probably not a fumble. But I don't really think that the refs in any part of the process, given the way the NFL rules are structured, that the refs made the wrong call at any point, which is just kind of a weird thing to say. It's like, I don't think it's a fumble, but the refs were right that it was, is ultimately how that plays out.
Right. Especially as fans, you know, at the point in time, you know, you're all pissed off, but then you go a couple of days into it, you kind of, you know, grieve about it. I should say I was already at the point where I'm like, it's the call on the field. You got to try. If the call on the field was that it wasn't a fumble, it would have stood. You know, there's no, I don't think it would have been
precise.
It wouldn't have been overturned. And you make good points in that the angles just weren't good. Like the ball could have been, you do see him holding onto the football, but it could have been moving. And if it's moving as he's going to the ground, that's a fumble. And you can't 100% determine. It's got to be 100% definitive evidence. And I don't want them to change that rule just because I'm a fan, because I think that that could be helpful for the Vikings and your whoever team you're a fan of, that's going to benefit you in a lot of cases as well, that it can't, and that there's a point to it why it's got to be 100% evidence to the call on the field, because you can't just be like, oh, well, we're 50-50. Let's just overturn it. You know, it's just, you can't do that. Yeah. So,
and that's kind of how I feel about the them not ruling, which ultimately didn't matter because they scored a couple of seconds later, right? But them not ruling the Justin Jefferson thing a touchdown either. That's actually why I put out there on Twitter, I don't know if Zimmer should have challenged this, because even though he's probably, again, probably correct that ultimately this was actually a touchdown,
yes,
we don't know if there's enough evidence to overturn it. And the Vikings' odds of scoring from the one, and I put this out there before the review came in, the Vikings' odds from scoring the one are super high. Like, I know everyone's frustrated about the holding penalties and the false starts. When I tweeted this
out, they're paranoid.
Right.
But
I tweeted this out and people were like, I don't trust them to score from the one. It's going to be, you know, second and 15 before you know it. And it's like, well, I sympathize. I understand why you're saying that. But the Vikings have a good offense, period. Like, that's true. Mm-hmm. They've got Dalvin Cook. They don't have a great run blocking offensive line, but enough to get 1 yard. They've got Adam Thielen, who's a great red zone weapon. They've got Justin Jefferson, who hasn't been a great red zone weapon, but I trust that he eventually will be. They've got Tyler Conklin. He's pretty good at contested catches. They've got a good enough offense to score from the one given 4 tries. I think they'll do it. Obviously there's a time element. The Vikings were behind. They need to catch up. So that plays a role. But if the odds that the referees decide to keep the call in the field are higher than your odds of scoring from the one, then you shouldn't challenge it. And that's a tough thing to grasp. As a coach, I think it makes sense that your initial, I guess, heuristic, your initial decision-making process is it true or is it not true? If it's true, I'll challenge it, right? I understand that that's the process and it's a much easier way to think about it. But the most strategic way to think about it is, what are my odds of turning this call that went against me into a positive versus what are my odds of getting that call correct? And that's the issue, is what are the odds that the refs will overturn the call on the field? And your prior should be, there's basically a 75% chance that they won't. And I would need, based off of the replay I'm seeing or the replay that the person in the booth is seeing in the stands, I would need that evidence to be so strong that that's not the case. So that's the way you should look at it. And that, if you think, and you know, they score on the next play, right? If you think about it like that, and then you also think about the fumble like that, it makes a lot more, I don't know about sense, but it's easier to understand what's happening in a football game if you think about it like that, instead of thinking about it like, is it true or is it false?
Yeah, I agree. And I think the disadvantage of that is, and what happened is losing that timeout when we already had no, and then we only had one timeout left, and that timeout, that one extra timeout could have been huge to give them an extra time on the clock to, you know, win in regulation instead of having to kick the field goal. Cause they were rolling down the field. You know, if they had that one extra timeout, they could have got even chance for a touchdown and would have won. But I mean, it's all hypotheticals, but it's
definitely better to have that timeout than not. Yeah, for sure.
Right. You're weighing the advantages and disadvantages. So that, I totally get that. And as much as that, that's another call where it's like, you're looking at it, probably a touchdown. But again, it's like I know there's a weird rules with the calf and all that stuff, and they can't 100% determine that. I totally get it. And it's just one of those things where it is what it is. We got to look at it from a neutral perspective outside of it being a fan and just kind of understand it, or else you're going to be depressed the whole
week. Just going to be mad.
Yeah, just going to be mad. You're going to be upset. Yeah. You got to understand it from a ref's perspective. And just, instead of just saying these guys suck, well, they are professionals and they do mess up sometimes, even brutally, but these were routine calls.
Yeah. It wasn't like, you know, the time the refs gave the 49ers an extra 2 timeouts that they didn't have or anything like that. Not like those huge fundamental errors. It's like, you know, a bang, bang, play, a call on the field they got kind of wrong. And then the way the rules are structured, they stuck with the wrong call. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Devin it was not hold onto the ball. Like,
right. Like it's just the timing that would happen at the very beginning of the first quarter. And it didn't impact, if it didn't have like a quote unquote impact on the game, people wouldn't really care. It's just, it's the timing of it. People are going to be bitch about it and be frustrated. I get it. You know, I mean, looking at a fan perspective, it probably wasn't a fumble. I totally get it. But it's like, again, don't be in that position in overtime against Cincinnati.
Well, and if they stop the fourth down, no one's talking about the fumble either. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, I thought they were going to get the Burrow in time. I thought they were going to get, but it's like this limited mobile guy had enough time to pass the football. And I know it was a great play by the Bengals, but I thought they had ample time to get to him and pressure him and make him throw it out all away or sack him. And they ended up executing it.
Yeah. So like, if the Vikings are that upset about it, just stop the fourth down.
Yeah, right? Stop the fourth down.
You even knew what play was coming. Like Zimmer said, they saw that play coming. based off of me rewatching the play, it actually did look like they knew. Zimmer wasn't lying. It looked like they were reacting to it as if that was the actual play. And Xavier Woods was a little bit out of position, and the defensive lineman didn't get to Burrow in time. I mean, just stop the fourth down.
Exactly. I was watching it, obviously, and I was like, they're going to pass here. I didn't know that was going to be the play. I can't sit here and tell you they're going to drop this play. Right, I have a football mind, but I'm like, they're going to pass. They're going to do something. Sure enough, they did. But I think overall, I mean, it was just nice to see the defense do pretty well, too. They looked a lot better, more improved than last year. They had some brutal plays, but they got to the quarterback at least. That did not happen last year. So I'm just I'm happy for that. But speaking going into this week now on Sunday, I think it's a 3 o'clock, 3:05 kickoff. I don't know. It's always it's never exactly how they put it on the damn TV schedule, but they're playing the Cardinals, and you eliminate penalties. If they get the penalty situation down, I think this isn't as much as a scary game as people are making out to be. However, you look at how mobile Kyler Murray is. It is concerning. I think our defense is much more improved in pressure in the quarterback, but they looked a little slow, even getting to a limited, mobility limited Joe Burrow from his ACL. It still looked like he struggled to get to him in some cases. Kyler Murray, I'm afraid he's just going to run all around the field. Every play could be a deep pass because he's going to create enough opportunity and time for him. And I'm scared they're not going to be able to get to him. I could be wrong. I'm just a little scared from what I saw. Saw a little slowness, I feel like, in some plays on a slow Joe Burrow. So I'm just a little scared for how they're going to come out against Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at the Titans. They signed one of the fastest defensive linemen to ever perform a combine drill in history, right? Bud Dupree, they signed him. He gets some free shots at Kyler Murray. Nothing. What's crazy is that usually these stats are pretty correlated. The two stats I'm going to talk about in a second, they're usually very tightly linked, which is why they sometimes get misunderstood. But Kyler Murray, more than any other quarterback in week one, held onto the ball longer, right? Longer than Aaron Rodgers, longer than Kirk Cousins, longer than Teddy Bridgewater, longer than any other quarterback in week one, right? He also only got pressured at a 25% rate. It was like the bottom 10% of quarterbacks in week one. So not a ton of pressure he saw and a ton of time holding onto the ball. Some of that, you know, he's scrambling around. He looks like friggin' Barry Sanders, right? I don't think he even looks like, you know, it'd be unfair to compare him to like Tarkenton or Vic, because that's not really what he was doing. He was doing Barry Sanders stuff behind the line of scrimmage, except he was pulling up to throw it, right? That throw to Rondale Moore, out of this world, right? Mm-hmm. I think that the way the Vikings will probably adapt to this is that they will very likely, you know, I never know, right? Zimmer's a much smarter defensive lineman than me. He probably has a different idea, but I would imagine that they're more likely to put their faster defensive linemen on the field, especially because I am more worried about Joe Mixon than I am about like, you know, Benjamin or whoever, Chase Edmonds. Right. Yeah. That's like, not to say that they're bad players, but they're not Joe Mixon. Right. So I would think that they're more likely to put their faster defensive linemen. So your Sheldon Richardson's, we'll probably see Everson Griffin on the inside a little bit more often. Obviously Danielle Hunter, DJ Wanham, Stephen Weatherly are going to get some play, but I would imagine that you're going to see less Dalvin Tomlinson, less Michael Pierce, just because catching up to Kyler Murray is just going to be harder. You just need faster dudes on the field. So I think that's going to play a part of it, but I think that, you know, that Cardinals offensive line has seen a little bit of improvement over the past couple of years. I don't think it is like all world. It's not like the Browns or the Packers or the old Steelers offensive line. I think there's definitely something to exploit. The Titans just didn't do it. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Titans are just, you know, really good. And that offensive line is just incredible. We'll see in a couple of weeks if that holds up. But for the most part, I think that's probably a line you can pass with the defensive personnel the Vikings have. I think they'll try to be faster. So hopefully, you know, the Cardinals open as like 5-point favorites or something like that, which is a pretty big swing from like the preseason expectations. Hopefully the Vikings kind of take advantage of the tools that they have. The fact that the only place that they have depth is on the defensive line, use that to do a better job chasing down Murray. Like, I don't know that you'll be able to do 100% of that, especially when you can just get rid of the ball and throw it to DeAndre Hopkins, or I guess Christian Kirk is good now, right? Like, you know, throw it to Rondale Moore, runs like a 4-3, right? It's going to be tough, but in terms of being able to kind of overwhelm that offense with the defensive line, I think that that's what they're going to try to do. I think that there's tools in the toolbox that didn't seem like they were there just because of the way this game against the Bengals played out.
Yeah, I think you just have to try to find a way to contain Murray in the end. And like I was going to mention off that point, they don't have a Joe Mixon at running back. They're going to be able to contain that quite well. And they did in most cases even play well against Joe Mixon. He got a little too many yards on a few too many plays, I thought. But, you know, you find ways to contain Murray. You could do some quarterback contain plays or something, but it's like you don't have to. Just don't let them run all around the field. That's all we're asking here, because I don't think they have this stellar offense like you see out of, you know, some of the top tier NFL teams, you know. But Kyler Murray, I feel like if you can just close in on him, don't allow him to, you know, kind of contain him, make sure he doesn't have a lot of mobility outside of the pocket, I think it'd do really well, because I don't think they're going to go up against, I think they're going to be able to stop Chase Edmonds, whoever the hell their running back is. I think they're going to be able to do just fine and stunning him and stopping him. And I don't think the Cardinals defense is that spectacular. As long as that, like I said, you limit those penalties and you play like you did in that second half. I mean, it could be a double digit win. I mean, honestly, I might be going ahead of myself, but I mean, if you get Delvin Cook going, yeah. A little aggressive on a Kyler Murray Cardinals offense on the road, people are going to be going after me for that. Oh, double digits. Oh, fuck you. But anyway, or I'm going to be jinxing it. But no, I mean, like, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But I mean, you limit down on the penalties. You just have a smooth flowing offense where you can at least start. Don't have a second and 15 every play or every drive for the first part of the for the first half. Just allow you to have first and tens for the most part. You're going to have some penalties. I know that. But I think that this game, you know, it's a very winnable game. And I think the Vikings in a lot of cases outweigh the Cardinals in a lot of areas. And it's just going to be tough on the road. And Kyler Murray is just really the only thing that's worrying me, is just being able to scramble, extend plays. And you're always going to find a receiver open if you do that.
Yeah, I think it's asking a lot, even if Patrick Peterson has had his career revived. Like, let's say that he has. Mm. It's still asking a lot to ask Peterson to shut down DeAndre Hopkins for 7 seconds on a play. That's not happening. Hopkins is finding a way to get open, right? So, and especially, you know, all these small, shifty receivers they have next to Hopkins, like Wondell Moore, Christian Kirk. I think Andy Isabella is still on the roster, right? Like, all of these guys that have the ability to, just after time, just break free. The key there is to just limit that time, right? Is to find a way to corral Kyler Murray and prevent him from extending the play. Easier said than done, obviously. I will say that defensively, the Cardinals are pretty interesting because they've got some pretty high-level players, right? They've got, obviously, Chandler Jones is coming off of a 5-sack game. Only happened, I think, 18 times in NFL history. That's pretty incredible. That's a worry. Buda Baker had a really great year last year after earning that contract. A little bit worried. Isaiah Simmons actually looked pretty good in this game, shutting down Derrick Henry. These positionless players that they have, right, where, you know, a player like Chandler Jones, as old as he is, can drop off into coverage if he wants to. You know, Isaiah Simmons can play safety, linebacker, occasionally even corner, same with Buda Baker. You know, those are issues, right? But, you know, they signed J.J. Watt. I don't know that Watt is the player that he once was. There's some opportunities there, right? I am still a little bit suspicious of that secondary. I mean, they played really well against, you know, A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, but I think more of it was that they played well against Ryan Tannehill. But, you know, I don't know that like Byron Murphy is actually turning into a hit instead of a bust, right? I think that there's some opportunities there, and I would take Justin Jefferson over Byron Murphy, right? So like, there are some opportunities on that defense, but you know, those three players really do worry me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm just hoping they can, as a fan, you know, fans for the Vikings, you know, you want to see them, you know, you got to try to pull this off and go 1-1, because you're going 0-2 into a Seattle game. And then the Browns.
And then the Browns, like, those are, right?
Yeah. And I don't care if Seattle's at home. Finally, they're at home, by the way. I feel like we always play them on the road. That's not going to be easy at all at home. I don't care if we have a sold-out crowd. Russell Wilson is so damn experienced. I don't think the crowd's going to fluster him as well, really that much. I mean, it's going to do more than, of course, if we're in Seattle. It's definitely going to be nice to have Seattle here. You know, but I'm worried about that. So I don't want to be 0-2. I don't want to be 0-2 going into that, especially, you know, when you knew you probably should have pulled off game one against the Bengals. And it's like, you got to try to find a way. Season's not over. I just want to put it now. If the Vikings do lose and they go 0-2, you're going to have people after this week were already saying they should tank the season, fire Zimmer, do all this. It's like, stop. So if we go 0-2, I feel like the whole Vikings fandom universe, especially on social media, is just going to totally fucking break. and they're going to act like we're 0-10, even though we're 0-2. So I'm already prematurely saying it, even if we do lose, still a long season. It just depends on how we would lose. If we go out and just look absolutely terrible and then we're 0-2, then it's a whole different story. But we're coming back home against Seattle and Russell Wilson next week. Still a long season, 17 games. I just find it laughable too that everybody in the NFC North went 0-1. So, and then I think, I think the Vikings are actually in first place.
Yeah, they hold like the fourth tiebreaker. Yeah. And so it's actually conference record and then point differential, but the Vikings are ahead in both because everybody else lost to NFC teams. The thing is, no matter what happens, the Vikings won't be first after next week because the Packers play the Lions. And, you know, presumably the Packers will beat the Lions, but even if the Lions win, if the Vikings win against the Cardinals, the Packers hold the division record, mm-hmm. the Lions, or whoever wins that game has the division record. So the Vikings will not be in the lead no matter what happens next week. But still, you know, it's kind of funny to point out, like, hey, out of all the 0-1 teams, the Vikings are in first place.
Hey, it depends. But what if they tie?
Yeah, if they tie and the Vikings win, the Vikings are just ahead, right? Oh. Which is
okay,
fantastic, right?
So there's still a scenario. But no way in hell. I wonder how what the odds are on the Lions and Packers tying, or any NFL game for that matter, but especially the Lions and Packers tying. Right. I bet you'd be like, I'd put $5 on it, see what happens. But
yeah, see if you can get 10,000 back, right?
Yeah, right. Seriously, why not? It's only $5. But no, that's just interesting to me. You know, it's like the whole season's reset. It's like 17 games. Now we're just back to a 16 game season. It's like this was another preseason game.
Essentially, yeah.
So that's
the Vikings had the best loss out of all of them, right? So, I mean, I guess, you know, it's in the cards. The thing is, they lose this game and then they go up against Seattle. If they're the kind of team that loses to the Bengals and the Cardinals, they're probably the kind of team that loses to the Seahawks, right? That's mm-hmm. likely true, right?
That's how it is.
And so if they start off the season 0-4, man, that's just so tough. You can obviously come back from that. The Vikings got really close actually to doing that. Last year. So like it's certainly possible. The thing is, I mean, their opponents include obviously the rest of the division, which includes, you know, we assume that the Packers are good despite what they did against the Saints. If that's not great news, but you know, maybe Justin Fields eventually starts for the Bears, right? That's something you have to worry about. But they do have to play like the Chargers they looked really good. You know, the Ravens, we saw how good, you know, they usually are. I mean, obviously late they kind of collapse, right?
Right.
But you know, they've got some really tough games down the schedule, too. It's not as if they're getting rid of all these tough games early in the season. If they start off 0-4, they're going to have to put off some, you know, pretty superhuman performances in order to really make up for it. And maybe it's the kind of team that hits the stride. We all remember Kirktober the last 2 years, his ability to kind of get a lot better after the first 4 weeks. It's possible, but man, that is a tough hole to dig yourself out of. I will probably start talking about the draft after week 5 if that happens.
Again, that would just be depressing if they start 0-4 for a second straight year, and it could easily happen. You look at their schedule, it's rough. So I hope it doesn't happen, but it very well could. And we almost have to prepare for it. You almost can't be surprised if it does happen because it's Minnesota sports. It's how we do things. We just constantly disappoint. I kind of want to shift gears here, kind of wrap up the show to more college football. You know, the team in town, the Golden Gophers, they had their second game of the season after dropping their first game against Ohio State to open up the year. It was an okay game. I mean, they had a decent outing against a top 5 team in the country. Obviously, defense kind of let us down. But then they play another Ohio team. And mind you, the first 3 or 4 games of the year, they play Ohio teams. So Miami of Ohio.
I have not looked forward into their schedule. That's
no, you don't. It's kind of depressing. Ohio State is the only exciting Ohio team that they are playing. It's Miami
of Ohio. Bobcats next?
In the same conference, they're playing Bowling Green.
Oh.
Not this weekend, but the next weekend for homecoming. A Mid-American Conference team, a MAC conference team as our homecoming game. I don't know why you schedule that. You have Nebraska coming in a couple weeks later. Why don't you make that the homecoming game?
Yeah,
it's beyond me.
Exciting. Yeah.
Shitty team. Whatever. Homecoming should still be fun, but still it's just stupid. But the Gophers, they did lose to Miami Ohio, or lose. They did beat.
It felt like they lost. Right.
It felt like they lost. Yeah. I would say. So they beat the Miami of Ohio only by 5. They're up like 21-3 at the half. I mean, mm-hmm. I was at the game. Up by 21-3, like, oh yeah, this can be a typical blowout. They don't they kind of close their playbook. PJ Fleck likes to close his playbook. It might not be like a 48-3 blowout, but they're going to handle it. Sure enough, they only scored 10 points in the second half. Miami of Ohio scores 24 points. It's or 23 points. I thought we were actually going to lose. Like I was dead set. Like, oh, we're fucking this game up. Like we're the Gophers. We do this stuff. But they did. They did end up winning by 5. And I would say, is this something that, as talking to the fans in general, as a fan or as a Gopher fan, would you be concerned after just week two? It is week two, and they did play okay against Ohio State, but after week two, after losing to a team out of a smaller conference that they probably should have handled a lot better, is it concerning going forward?
Yeah, I think so, especially because, like, I guess that Ohio State team is just, like, not... That doesn't look as good of a loss as it did a week ago, right?
Right, because they lost to Oregon in Columbus, and I think they were on a 23-game home winning streak that was snapped.
Yeah.
And so, I know Oregon's good, but still.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, Ohio State at home, you usually kind of just book that, right? The thing is, like, I remember after that Gophers game, I saw odds for C.J. Stroud being in the Heisman race, and I was like, do we watch the same game? That's not that good. And he wasn't against Oregon either. You know, maybe he'll turn it on second half of the season. I don't know. Maybe they'll throw in that like 17-year-old or whatever that they just recruited, which would be, you know, funny as hell. I would love that. But I mean, this Gophers team, obviously, if they had won the Ohio State game and then just had this close game, we'd be talking about them a lot differently. But I kind of expected more based off of, you know, what we're hearing about how good Tanner Morgan is, how, you know, he was probably the best returning quarterback in the Big Ten, which that's not like amazing competition, right?
But but he's like most experienced.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you want to see a lot more than what we've seen out of him. You know, I've seen some criticisms of the offense that I think I agree with. Again, I don't watch the Gophers all that much, but, you know, that's kind of a concern. But the thing for me was, aside from the offensive line, who are like, they're like 30 years old, right? So you expect them to do well.
Yeah.
And they're doing really well. I think that offensive line is great. Mm-hmm. Aside from them, all these other players that you expected really good performances out of, you're just not really seeing much of. Like Tanner Morgan, I mentioned, but like, you know, a lot of people are talking about Boye Mafe, right? He hasn't really shown up. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has a sack. I think he's got like one quarterback hit. Miles Pinckney, you know, I expected more from him. Justice Harris, I expected more from him. You know, these are experienced guys from a program that has actually produced some pretty good talent at those positions, especially, you know, safety and cornerback, right? So I really thought that we'd get more from that Gophers defense that has been, I think, historically fairly underrated over the past couple of years and is just not showing up. Like Tyler Newbin is like kind of like the only guy that whose name I hear consistently enough that I actually appreciate watching play. We're not really seeing much from like kind of the more, you know, well-regarded players in the program, aside from the offensive line who are just killing it. And it would have been so nice to see Muhammad Ibrahim have a full healthy season. Right. Mm-hmm. And Tyler Potts is playing well too. Right. Like I think Potts is doing well, but like, you know, aside from the offensive line and the running backs, like they don't have much. It just feels weird. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that the defense was, I guess, the biggest question mark going in the season. But you did look at the roster and all the guys you named. They have plenty of experience. I know Boye Mafe has been regarded as a potential NFL draft pick. You know, in the first four rounds. You know, and his stock can move up and down throughout the year. And some of the other guys, even on the defensive side of the ball, and they haven't really showed up all that much. There's been a couple plays, but. You know, in Ohio State that were like, oh, wow, you know, you shut down this wide receiver. You did rush through that offensive line. But then Miami of Ohio, they're looking good early on. It's like this Miami of Ohio, this is a team out of a small conference. I mean, they're not like the worst team in the league. Miami of Ohio has historically had consistent above average quarterbacks come out of them. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger came out of Miami, Ohio, believe it or not. Yeah. And they've actually had, you know, some decent quarterbacks come out of this program. But it's like, you're playing at home after playing Ohio State, a top five team. You have a lot of expectations on the year. You can't, you know, give up that many points in the second half and then barely win. And I think what happened too is being at the game, I think they didn't even really pass the football in the last quarter. Like, I love PJ Fleck, but all they were doing is running up the middle. I'm like, is this Mike Zimmer? I was sitting there like, is this Mike Zimmer? What the hell's going on here? They're just running the ball up the middle. He's playing way too conservative.
Yeah, acted like they still had that 20-point lead. I was like, show some urgency, man. What is happening?
It's like they're within 3 points here, man. And you're running up the middle and we're putting it away. And he'd be like, I trust my team. But come on, we need to kick these guys' asses. We got to make a point here.
Right.
And try to pass. Use this as an opportunity.
Trust Tanner Morgan, right? You talk about trusting your team. No matter what play call you're calling, you're going to be trusting your team. Just do it. Do the right one, right? It's so weird to say something like that. Yeah.
Right.
No, it's frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah. And they have every time he passed that game, Tanner Morgan's looked okay. You know, they've been able to connect. They have a Daylon Wright transfer from Texas A&M, who's looking fantastic,
good, doesn't he? Yeah, wow, fantastic. I should have mentioned him too. Yeah, he looks great.
He looks amazing, and they're out what they say is our best receiver, Chris Ottman Bell. I think he's going to be ready here, and maybe by Saturday or in the coming weeks. But it's like,
yeah, he's going to be important, isn't he? Yeah,
oh, for sure,
yeah,
100%. And it's just you have all these weapons offensively on the wide receiver game. Even you know some of these depth guys, Mike Brown Stevens has shown to be have a little bit of potential. Is a third kind of the wide receiver three position for the Gophers, and they haven't even they didn't utilize him in that second half. It's like they didn't show any urgency of this team out of the Mid American Conference, the MAC, coming back on the Gophers. They showed no damn urgency. It's like, but I will say. And people are like, oh, my dad's super pessimistic. And part of me is like this too, you know, it's like, oh, this is going to be a long season.
I get it.
But I like to point out in 2019, they opened up the season. They almost lost to South Dakota State.
That's right.
They only beat them by a few points. The second game, they go to Fresno State, who aren't the worst program in the world, but they did not have a good year that year. Yeah. And it turned out we barely beat them in overtime. And then we almost lost to Georgia Southern, who just came up from the FCS ranks a few years prior to that. I remember we were on like a 4th and 15. We had to convert that or we would have lost. We would have lost to Georgia Southern. And those were 3 non-conference games all in a row. And everybody's like, this is going to be a rough year.
Yeah.
And guess what happened? We went 9-0, beat Penn State, almost won at Iowa, got kind of clobbered to Wisconsin here. But we ended up having one of the most historical seasons, best seasons in history, finishing 11-2, beat Auburn in the Outback Bowl. Or whatever it was, and we started that season horribly against
I remember lobbying my editor to get credentials for the Rose Bowl because I was like, well, what did they make the Rose Bowl? My editor was like, relax, Reef. I was like, no, they're gonna make the Rose Bowl.
right. It was still a bit of a stretch for us to even beat Wisconsin, go to the Big Ten championship game, but
it was there. There was an opportunity.
Right. We had the opportunity actually, legitimately, because. We go to the Big Ten championship game. We lose. We go to the Rose Bowl. Like, we're not beating Ohio State or whoever was in that. I think it was Ohio State. But my point is it's like the Minnesota fans calming down. Like, look at 2 years ago, we started very, very, very shitty to a really bad team. We almost lost to South Dakota State and Georgia Southern. Like, and we ended up going 9-0. So it all comes down to, I think in the end, they just didn't open up the playbook. I think Fleck just played way too conservative on his playbook. And that's what I like to believe what happened from what I saw in the second half. It was just Mike Zimmer plays. That's what I compared it to. It was Mike Zimmer plays.
Certainly what it felt like. Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, obviously, you know, if you say, hey, if they run the schedule, which is asking a lot, right? But, you know, they run the schedule. They beat Iowa late. They beat, I think they've got Wisconsin at the very end, because of course they do.
Yes.
Then, you know, they go to the Big Ten championship. They got a chance to replay Ohio State, right? And if they win it's there. It's possible. It's asking a lot.
I was going to say the rematch is there for Iowa State and the way they're looking. I don't know. Maybe we could go back in and get some revenge. But yeah, right. you do look at the Gopher schedule. It's brutally easy. But, I mean, it's kind of a long shot to say a schedule is easy for any Minnesota team. Especially the Gophers.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but it does get lighter. They play really crappy teams that are not looking good, you know, like Illinois, right. Nebraska.
I was about to say, even the big name teams are just like not good, right? Like Nebraska is not good.
Right. Even Iowa, they beat Iowa State this past weekend. But
that
Iowa
was
State
a shocker. I was kind of upset, honestly.
Well, me too, 100%. I hate Iowa. I hate the Iowa Hawkeyes. I like Iowa State, but Iowa State has not impressed me this year. I think I forgot who they
so much. Well, they got Brock Purdy. They've got that running back that's probably like the second rounder, like a great freaking running back, right? Breece Hall or something like that. And they've got a pretty good offensive line, and they've typically been able to produce receivers, right? Like they've just have been able to. So I expected Iowa State. I mean, I saw some preseason rankings for Iowa State that had them at like 5 or 6, right? Like I expected Iowa State to come in. I mean, I guess that's why they play the games, but like, man. That sucks. It would have been nice if Iowa was worse.
Yeah, for sure. I will say though, like Iowa State, I don't know if they're as good as their ranking. I know they almost lost to somebody in their first game of the season. I forgot who it was. It was like a really shitty opponent, but I still even think, even with Iowa, like they're beatable. I don't think Spencer Petras is all that great, you know, to be honest with you, but I mean, he has some pizzazz to him, but honestly, that might be just bias coming out, but I mean, typical Minnesota stuff, typical Minnesota sports show, but kind of last thing I want to bring up is, speaking of the Gopher schedule, they play Colorado this weekend, noon kickoff in Boulder. And people that don't know Colorado, the Buffaloes, I think they are called. Mm-hmm.
CU Buffaloes, yeah.
Yeah, the CU Buffaloes. Yeah, they almost beat the fifth-ranked Texas A&M at home, where the Gophers are going to this Saturday. I think they only lost 10-7. It was very low scoring, but Colorado looked very solid defensively. And I'm telling you, if the Gophers go in the way they played against Miami, Ohio, they might get trounced, honestly. But if they open up, I'm hoping it was a playbook thing. They're just kind of keeping it closed. Because if it's the team that showed up against Ohio State, at least offensively, they're going to have right. a shot.
So the thing about this is, like, I'm always worried about, like, these non-conference games that occur in somewhat unique locations. Because, mm-hmm. like, if you're a conference team, if you're like Hawaii, right, you play Colorado every so often, you kind of know the deal. But like mm-hmm. the deal for me, like here, it's the elevation, right?
Yeah.
If you don't prepare your players for that elevation, those first two quarters are going to be brutal. And if it's a location that, you know, like if you go play in Michigan and there's 100,000 fans in the stands, that might, you know, rattle your players a little bit. But the Gophers, you know, they've played in Michigan enough so they can know it, right? But a non-conference game, that always worries me. I think that probably played a role in Texas A&M having a lot of difficulty there. So. That's my biggest worry. It's not necessarily, you know, who plays for Colorado. They could be great.
Right.
I don't know anything about them, honestly.
No.
But like in away game, non-conference always worries me.
Yeah, for sure. In general, non-conference for the Gophers, when they play a team out of the Power Five, even if they're a lower tier Power Five, a team that we match up against really well, I'm not trusting that analysis because they could go in and totally lay an egg. But I mean, if they're, they need a little redemption here. I mean, after kind of, you know, blowing what I thought was a good opportunity to beat a top five team in Ohio State, looking at that, they now lost to Oregon. That was a winnable game now for sure. And not blowing out Miami, Ohio, but a win's a win. I don't believe in ugly wins personally. It's a win's a win. It's a win in the win column. Well, PJ says that. He says there's no such thing as ugly wins, even though there can be. So let's be, right. let's
well, he also, that straight. He's also one of those, like, every week is a season where 0-0 yeah. this season. Yeah.
Yeah. So out of the Ohio State, they're 0-1, but they were also 0-0. So technically the Gophers are undefeated right now in right. some sort of weird PJ logic.
Yeah, exactly.
But if it works, yeah, he did it. He heavily emphasized.
Right. It worked in 2019.
It worked. So we're going in this season 0-0 or we're 1-0 or whatever you want to look.
Yeah.
So,
however it works. Yeah. I don't really know what the logic or where it starts, but that's yeah.
Whatever PJ's thing is, I'm all for it, but we'll see if it works. They're going into Colorado at noon on Saturday. I'm glad. I love college football, and it's a whole weekend of football. I'm just hoping they can pull it off, because I think to go, like we were talking about with their opportunity, with their schedule, they have an opportunity to, again, have another chance, a shot at winning the division and going to the Big Ten championship game and seeing what they can do and potentially making a Rose Bowl. So I think it starts with the game against Colorado, and you know, to really kind of show people that, okay, this team is good. I think it's a good test in the end. So
yeah,
Miami, Ohio is just a shitty team. It's kind of hard to gauge how good they are in a way, because you don't know if they were put their foot off the gas.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, yeah, that's tough. But you also kind of want like you do want the killer instinct a little bit, right? Because like when mm-hmm. Alabama played Mercer, they were like relentless, right?
Yeah.
And like, and that's one of the reasons that Alabama's so good. That's why they never have like an App State beats Michigan moment, right? It's because they're like, yeah, we're taking this opponent very seriously. We know they can win. Here are the ways that they can win. And here's what we're going to do to deal with that. And we're going to put up 50 points. And then after the game, if we don't put up 50 points, I'm going to tear into my players because they should be doing better and they're not winning their assignments. And, you know, he does a great job keeping his staff focused, right? There's never an easy game. And I love that about Saban, right? And that just kind of concern, if that's the case, right? If it's the case that they were just like, all right, 20-point lead, we can kind of close up the playbook a little bit. That early, that worries me. I don't like that attitude.
If that's the case,
if that's what happens.
I mean, from what I saw on the field, it did look like they were running very simplistic plays, but it doesn't make sense to me. I don't know if we just want to injure players for next week, but it's like you almost lost the damn game over it, man.
Right. After a collapse against Ohio State, at the very, like, obviously everything relies on public perception. That's the way polls work. It sucks. That's just the nature of college football. You can't have all 128 teams play each other, right? So at the very least, for public perception's sake, beat the snot out of them. Kill them, mm-hmm. right? But even if you don't care what the outside world thinks, which in college football is like kind of dumb relative to the NFL. Mm-hmm. At least in the NFL, you just win your games, you're fine.
Right.
In college football, it matters. But even if it doesn't matter, dude, like, prove to your players, right, that you're a good team. Like, let your players mm-hmm. instill themselves. Like, because I can't imagine anything more deflating for, like, a four-star athlete recruited to a Big Ten program to almost lose to Miami of Ohio, especially if you're the kind of team that does not respect Miami of Ohio, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, yeah, we can let up on them, and then you almost lose, that sucks, right? Have the confidence to go in and beat the shit out of them.
Yeah, it's the Minnesota Knights mentality. It's so annoying, but it literally goes not only from just everyday interactions with people. It literally goes into a sport that is about beating up on people. And apparently, Minnesota Knights has spilled over into a sport that is violent in Minnesota, at least. And I don't like it. I don't like it. That's where I go to watch this stuff to see more aggression, you know? So, cause it's almost too nice outside of it, and especially right, yeah, in this state. Right. Yeah. So no, but it's 100% true. I will see what happens this, you know, for both the Vikings this weekend with, you know, Kyler Murray and against Kyler Murray and the Gophers against Colorado. Of course, this is the rundown. I'd like to talk about, you know, the Twins, irrelevant at this point. We're done. It's over. It's on to the off season. We'll see what happens next year. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I like to point out, though, we're almost at preseason hockey. The Wild are coming up. Where NHL's almost starting up again. And
no way you're excited about the Wild, man.
Oh, that's my buy. I love hockey personally. So it's like I'm excited for it coming back. But
right.
It's like,
yeah, hockey's great.
They haven't even signed Kirill Kaprizov yet. And like, what the hell's going on here? What's going on?
I rely heavily on Russo for all of this, right? I mean, Plug, oh, yeah. My colleague at Athletic, but he's also right. Like the best Wild writer, right?
Oh, and like, yes.
But like, dude, the fact that there's like stuff in the way preventing, like, well, I forget what the phrase, that there's still obstacles or things in the way of getting them to
how?
Like, what in the world? Dude, back up the Brinks truck, man. It's so Minnesota sports that they had the foremost electric rookies in the Big Four, period, of in the league, in all of their respective leagues, they had the most electric rookies, and they can't do shit about it. That's the most Minnesota thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, seriously, you're in September. We're about 10 days away from preseason hockey, about under a month from the regular season starting, and you bring in a guy that's this ultimate stud, you know, from Russia, one of our most sensationalized players in Minnesota sports history, and you can't rack him up. What's going on? This is the most Minnesota thing. If we lose him, you almost can't be surprised anymore.
Right,
I almost would give up on Minnesota sports. I'm done. This podcast is done. I'm done. I'm quitting everything. I'm just going to go live in the woods, and just my only purpose in life at this point would be trying to feed myself, because then that's the only thing I have to focus on. I'm not focusing on sports anymore. So, no, but it's true. It's just, it's ridiculous. We're this close to the season and nothing's happening. So, but yeah, I know Russo's the guy. If you got some inside information that he tells you that he can't put on the record, you can give it to us off the record, but we'll probably put it on the record. No, I'm just joking. We wouldn't do that.
We don't talk that much, but I'll see if I can get Russo to talk to me about the Wild.
Pry something out of him, because that whole situation is ridiculous. But I just want to make that known that we're hockey season's almost here. In general, I love watching hockey. The excitement is back, but the Wild, it's just I don't know. It is kind of eerie at this point. You know, you feel like they're gonna fuck something up that is so great at this point. But we'll see what happens. Just another team that we talk about that has just woes in the postseason. We'll have to see whether all that goes. But I think that'll do it for another episode of the Minnesota Rundown. We went into everything of Vikings and Gophers, and obviously just talked briefly a little bit about the Wild because the hockey season is coming up. Twins are irrelevant at this point. Don't need to waste another breath talking about them. But Arif, I want to thank you again for coming on the Minnesota Rundown. It was a pleasure, and just picking your brain about the Vikings and everything else. It's been awesome.
Yeah, for sure, man. Totally. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Again, I want to welcome on Arif Hassan. You can follow him at Arif Hassan NFL on Twitter. So if you want to get, I know you tweet great shit, you know, great takes on everything. Even if people go after you, it's all fun. It's all in fun of social media. So if you want to follow him on there, again, he covers the Minnesota Vikings for the Athletic, also the Kansas City Chiefs co-owner. So just remember that until he's another team's co-owner.
Until I need to win another argument. Yeah.
Yeah. Until you need to win another argument, that's what's going to happen. So again, check him out. I want to thank, it was a pleasure having him on. Also guys, if you don't follow us already, but want to follow us, 10,000 takes. You can find us currently right now at 10K takes _ on Twitter. We're also on Instagram, Facebook. Just search 10K takes or 10,000 takes. You'll find our 10K red logo, wherever it may be. We're also on TikTok. We're putting some funny stuff out there, not dancing videos, just actual good, funny stuff, legitimate. And just to also shout out, we also do have a show on KFAN Plus 96.7 every day at 2 p.m. Our It's a Bit radio show, kind of more sports entertainment, pop culture stuff on every day at 2 p.m. on 96.7 KFAN Plus. But I think it might be on at 9:30 on KFAN 100.3, the main station, this Saturday night after one of the national televised college football games. So if you want to listen to a late night radio or you're on the way to the bar, listen to us on the radio. It really kind of is almost a drunken shit show, I should say, of us talking. And then also we have our 10K Invitational Charity Golf Tournament coming up at the end of September, September 30th at Bunker Hills Golf Course in Coos Rapids, Minnesota. You go to 10ktakesmn.com. You should find a 10K Invitational tab. You can go there to sign up. If you're also a business that want to sponsor, there's also a tab for that. More information there. But also if you go to our website, like I just mentioned, 10ktakesmn.com, we have a bunch of funny, goofy blogs regarding Vikings, regarding anything in pop culture, Minnesota, mainly Minnesota sports, but some stuff in pop culture. We have all that funny stuff on there. So that's all of our, wanted to plug all of our stuff. But again, Arif Hassan covers the Vikings for the Minnesota, or covers the Vikings for the Athletic. Again, at Arif Hassan NFL on Twitter, if you want to follow him on there. I want to thank you again for joining me on this episode of the Minnesota Rundown. I am, of course, your host, JJ Journalist Jake. Thank you guys for listening to another episode. Have a great rest of your week.